When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I want to know what you really are.
I can't let you do this.
Come on, let's see you.
It's suicide.
Oh, just you watch.
No one can survive that.
We need...
A hole to open.
Yes, and what do you do?
They're randomly generated.
They stooped at its heart. Used it for fuel and now it's streaming.
What's a two-person job?
They're on their way.
That pod's going to smash into it.
It's alive. It's alive. It's alive.
Impact
is one. Here comes the drums!
Hello and welcome to Pull to Open, the only quest on your podcast aisle, the only random quest through all of the stories in Doctor Who history, and a random quest through different ways to produce the Doctor Who theme tune. My name is Chris Taylor.
And I'm Pete Paschal. And yes, it's true. Chris and I are all about the sound of drums at the beginning of this thing, done live every single time. But of course, we are also a couple of journalists who enjoy talking about Doctor Who. You might even think of us as a couple of sci-fi roughnecks who feel that we have the right to mine whatever we want from the show whenever it pleases us.
Damn straight. So, drill, baby, drill.
That's right. I hope the show doesn't feel like it's violated and needs to take revenge at us on some point. But you know,
it's alive. It's alive. It's alive. But that's okay, because Pull to Open is alive as well. And here's what has been happening in its life so far. Sometime back, not so far ago in 2023, we went to the Impossible Planet and the Satan Pit. Which was all astronauts and grimy spacesuits, and that may become relevant. Three stories ago, though, more recently, we were way back in the French Revolution, supposedly the Doctor's favorite period of history ever, the Reign of Terror.
When he was younger, but
a wee William Hartnell-shaped sapling.
He was basically just fresh out of college, let's face it. Like, yeah, of course he loves the French Revolution.
Well, he's like a Reign of Terror hipster. He's like, yeah, the French Revolution is great, but like I'm just a particular fan of the Reign of Terror. Like, I really love that album. You know, it only lasted for 1 year. You probably don't know it. And then we went from the Doctor's dream period of history, apparently lots of guillotines and rich people, to something that was a complete mare for the Doctor in Amy's Choice, in the dream world with the Dream Lord.
I love how we have zeroed in on that completely forgotten line from that episode, which we're bringing it back, baby. We're making mare happen here on Pull to Open. It's going to be a thing that Doctor Who hipsters say in 2024.
Oh my goodness. We may even make it a rating if you stick around long enough. But no, pay us and we won't make it a rating. No, we'll get to that. But where we went from Amy's Choice, we rocketed back to 1967 and forward to 2070 at the same time. How did we do that, you say? That's because we went to the moon base with Patrick Troughton and Jamie and Ben and Polly and Polly Cocktail and a bunch of second generation Cybermen. Cybermen 2.0, you might say. And then we jump back into the randomizer. And where did the randomizer take us after the moon? Well, it took us to a sun, not the sun, but a sun that might as well be our sun, because they keep calling it the sun. But anyway, it took us from the moon base to the sun in Series 3, Episode 7, Chris Chibnall's first outing in Doctor Who. It is 42.
Very notable for that reason, yeah. I'm glad we got that out of the way early.
I mean, notable for a number of reasons. Obviously, there's the Douglas Adams reference, and there's the ticking clock, there's the 24 reference, both of which were guessed by fans beforehand, which both Chibnall and RTD were trying to keep the lid on what this episode was about. The fans said, hey, is it anything to do with 42, meaning of life? Well, sort of. Is it anything to do with 24? Well, sort of. We're doing a ticking clock. And it's a very, well, sort of, doing a lot of things kind of story.
Is it? Is it the only, we should have looked this up beforehand. Is it the only Doctor Who title that's a number, just purely a number?
Ooh, good question. I don't know, but I know that we are going to talk more about Doctor Who titles in a second. But before we get there, we want to let you know that you can be what Martha Jones is in 42. She becomes really a true companion. She gets the phone, she gets the TARDIS key, and you will get that too with Pull to Open. If you're on YouTube, you can, for the low, low price of $7.99 a month, become a true companion of the podcast. And for just a little bit extra, you could be a Viscount banger. That's right, our top rating. You can be one of those, and you can actually join us on the show. We help us tick down our clock in real time. But before we get to that, and I should say we're going to try a little experiment this week. When we get to our commentary, once we do our TLDW summary of 42,
our very ticking clock portion of the show,
very ticking clock
pressure.
But then we're not going to ignore the ticking clock after that. We're going to set the ticking clock after that for 42 minutes of commentary, and we're going to hopefully not overshoot that because we will fall into the sun. And we invite you to burn with us.
For those of you just joining us, if this is your first Pull to Open and just went 42 minutes, I don't have time for that. It's going to be fine. We'll be here with you the whole time. We're going to hold your hand. And it's going to seem like 12.
It's going to seem like 4.2 minutes.
Exactly.
You're going to say there's a missing decimal point in that clock, my friend. But it's not. But anyway, yes, it is time first, going back to Doctor Who titles and the question of whether there are any numbers in. Let's consider Doctor Who titles.
The Humoji Challenge.
Yes, specifically, let's consider torturing me with Doctor Who titles.
Yep, Doctor Who titles in the form of an emoji. That is our thing, and we love to get Chris to guess them, sometimes successfully.
Yeah.
On this segment, when I describe emojis to him and he guesses the Doctor Who story that those emojis correspond to.
Yes, and I just want to say that I've kind of like, I don't look at the codex anymore. Like, I don't look at the list of titles.
Oh.
I try to, just to make it harder on myself, I don't do any prep week after week for this thing. I'm coming to it fresh from my, embedded long-term memory of Doctor Who titles.
You say that like don't doing prep for this podcast is like special. Like this is the most highly produced thing.
Yeah.
Although we did make some notes. So those, by the way, you can get every week by subscribing to our newsletter at pulltoopen.net. You will get full notes on the show, which include things that we often don't get to. So there's definitely bonuses there. But we're not doing that right now. We're not talking about our website or our newsletter. We're talking about the Humoji Challenge. And this Humoji comes to us from Joe Rapp. And this is the fourth and final in a series of Humojis he gave us a little while ago. We had a quick break to make sure we had one from one of our reviewers on Apple Podcasts. But we're back here with the final in the Joe Rapp series, and man, Chris, this could be the hardest of them all.
Boy. Oh, God. Okay, well, then I won't feel bad when I don't get it.
Okay, well, here we go. There are four emojis in this Humoji.
All right, setting the timer at 42 minutes for me to guess this.
All right, first emoji is Prince, a man with a crown on his head, basically.
Okay.
Second emoji, a diamond, the blue diamond.
Okay.
Third emoji, guy with a beard. Fourth emoji, male doctor.
Oh,
I'm going to put this in the chat for you.
What?
All right, so it's kind of a lot of dudes and a diamond.
A lot of dudes and a diamond. I love that Doctor Who story. the beard and the doctor. The prince, the diamond, the beard, and the doctor.
That's pretty much it, yes.
Prince, the diamond, the beard, and the doctor. Is it oh God, no, I can't even see the blue diamond. I'm thinking of the Metabilis 3 thing.
Oh yeah, the blue crystal.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, but
Joe's
it's not
wedding gift.
Joe Grant.
Not Joe Rapp, Joe Grant.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm guessing from your reaction, that's not what it is. See,
it's not what it is. Let me know if you'd like a hint.
Yes, please.
New Who.
New Who, okay. Oh, God, that makes it even worse. Prince Diamond, Man with a Beard, Doctor. Oh, God. Everything is throwing me off here.
So there's a through line through all of these things, and the Doctor is what you would expect. It represents the Doctor, but he is among these people and object.
He's among the people and object.
They're all category. They're all contenders, candidates in this. They're all part of a group.
My Doctor and other animals. Gosh, I don't know. Contenders in a group. I mean, when I think Doctor in the title, I'm thinking name, day, time, and it's none of those. Right.
Name, day, time. I'm not. Now you're giving me a brain teaser. I'm not sure what you mean by that. But
the Doctor titles. Titles with Doctor in them.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
So think about this. Now, the things that aren't objects are all men.
Yes, they are.
Right. So think about that. That factors in the maleness of the emojis.
The Doctor and the men. The men. Day of the Men. Day of the Male Doctors. gosh, no. Titles
it's
all
Magic Mike, okay? Settle
down. That time the Doctor joined the Chippendales. Wow, no, it's fleeing from my head. I'm so sorry.
Okay, this thing, this category of person, of man, to a specific companion of the Doctor.
It's not Amy's
friend,
choice,
anyway.
Is it? Oh God!
You're getting in the right era there.
Amy's choice.
Not quite, actually, but it's the beginning of this arc.
The girl who waited. The 11th hour.
I guess companion isn't quite right. It's the person the Doctor knows quite well.
School. It's not school reunion. Gosh, I'm
this represents
so
the
mad.
Last episode in this person's arc.
Oh God, last episode. See now,
and it's
got
all
Amy.
Men. The title has something to do with them being all men, and the Doctor is one of these men.
Last episode. It's not World Enough in Time. It's last episode in a friend's arc.
More than a friend.
Oh, the husbands of River Song.
It's the husbands of River Song.
Oh,
so only,
my
only
God.
With 27 hints. Never took you that many.
With only 32 minutes left on the clock. oh, my God. What's the prince and the beard and the...
There's King Hydroflax.
Oh, okay.
There's a diamond that River claims she's married to.
Oh, wow.
And then there's that guy, Ramon.
Okay.
And right? Then those are the husbands, and then the Doctor.
Oh, wow.
Need a break?
I kind of do. Can we take a type 42?
We can definitely take a type 42, particularly Seconds. After I remind everyone, you too can stump Chris Taylor by simply submitting a humoji via Apple Podcasts and leaving a review. You can leave it as the title of review or the body of review or both. Leave more than one. Leave them often because I love this part, guys. This is my favorite part of the show. It's awesome. Give me more pleasure. And yeah, let's actually move on. You need some more recovery.
Yeah, wow,
I'll take this. It's fine.
Okay.
We're moving on to the next thing, which of course is folks on Spotify have another great way to interact with the show. And that is of course voting for their rating for the Doctor Who stories we talk about. So you right now, you could actually go into your app, your Spotify app, swipe up there, and you will find that you can vote on 42 and tell us what you think. It's a Viscount Banger, a Dalek, an Ogron, or what have you. And we will report on those poll results in a future pull to open, which is exactly what we're doing now. And we're doing That's it right. for Amy's Choice.
Yeah, so Amy's Choice, we all said it was a Dalek. It was a triple Dalek, which I believe is the first time it's happened in full to open history. And you, Dalek dear triumphant. Listeners, Dalek triumphant, the Dalek, the three Daleks who rule triumvirate.
Yeah, yes, and the triumvirate is triumphant in this case.
The triumvirate is triumphant with a whopping 62.5%. The Dalek wins. Close runner-up was the Viscount Banger, which I said I was really trying to give Amy's Choice the Viscount Banger. I was trying to find some way to justify it as one of the best of the best.
Yeah.
But that you know, but that sort of feeling is pervasive, at least got 80.8% of the vote. 6.3% said a Professor Hayter. Same said Fixed Point in Time and Lady Cassandra.
Yeah.
Interesting. People thought it was a thin, very small number of people thought it was a thin plot.
Nobody thought it was an Ogron, though. Everyone recognizes this is a good episode of Doctor Who. Maybe a couple, you know, party poopers think it's, I admire them trying to do something here, but they didn't like it. But that was a very small minority. The very solid majority thinks this is a good episode of Doctor Who. We couldn't agree more.
Right, but you can change these results. Time can be rewritten. Polls can be added to. We've kept the poll open, all of those polls, from now through the 42nd century. You can keep voting. So go and vote on Amy's Choice. Vote on 42 right now if you feel like it, if you don't care what we're about to say, and you just want to, you know, your poll figure is itching, you can do it. Pull up on the bottom of the screen. Spotify lets us do it right now.
We're about to talk about it, and that's happening.
We are about to get into it, and we start with what we start with every week on the podcast for the commentary section, TLDW, Too Long Didn't Watch, Too Long Doctor Who, in which this week, Pete, it's your turn to summarize the entire episode in what we allot for New Who episodes, which is 1 minute, not 42 seconds. You get basically.
It's not a minute 42, is it?
It's no. Sorry. This should, you know, should be an easy one.
It's not an easy one. You know what? It's funny. This is the only time. Like, I usually don't even think about this until it's time to do it, and then we do it, and you know, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. This is one of the only times ever I have practiced the TLDW.
Whoa.
And holy cow, did I not do it? Like, in other words, like, it's surprising. I know it's a straightforward story. There are a surprising number of things you kind of need to describe as you do this. So I'm kind of glad I practiced, and I didn't really practice a lot. Like, I tried it once, and I sort of mostly did it in my head. But I was just like, holy cow, like, surprisingly, there's a lot of context.
That's dangerously close to going professional on TLDW.
And yeah, I know. Have a
big,
I want to avoid
that problem about, you know, the pro game versus the amateur game, and sponsorship is going to come in, and it's not going to be the same old TLDW we know and love. But that's okay.
We can live with that.
we also have the question of whether performance enhancing drugs are allowed. If you just, you know, snort a giant rail of space cocaine right now, will you get through it any faster, or will your brain just melt and you can't actually remember anything? Who knows? We have to find out. But we will find out your skills at summarizing the episode 42 in just 1 minute, and then we will go to the ticking clock that will give us no more than 42 minutes for our commentary. And Peter, you're ready to go through this. It sounds like you kind of psyched yourself out with the practice round.
I'm good. Yeah, I'm good. Yeah. Let's just do this. I'm going.
All right. The official pull to open summary of 42 in 1 minute begins in 3, 2, 1, go.
It's the far future, and the Doctor and Martha respond to a distress call on this freighter that is by orbiting a star, but the engines have shut down. It's going to crash into the star, and then something goes wrong with all the lockdown, and all the doors are locked. They're deadlocked, sealed. They can't just use the sonic screwdriver, and they're cut off from the TARDIS. So now they have to get these doors open, and Martha goes with one guy to do that, to get to the bridge, to turn on the engines, and the Doctor, meanwhile, is trying to help this guy, Corwin, who's had some weird kind of infection because he was exposed to the star. They realize Corwin's been sort of taken over by this thing that's we don't know what it is, but it's essentially the star that is using him as a vessel to kill everyone who has violated him, because this freighter has taken particles from the sun, and it's kind of wants revenge for this violation. And so Martha, they try stalking Martha. Martha accidentally goes into an escape pod. She has this moment with her mom while she calls on the phone. Her mom is actually being monitored by Harold Saxon, but the doctor saves her and gets her back in the ship, but he gets his zapped by the star too, and he's been infected. But at the last second, Martha gets to the bridge, deaths in the particles, and then they can pull away. And Martha gets a key.
Very good. I'm going to say that 6 seconds over.
Yeah.
I love that you, when you said the words "what with a second to go," I think that's how you put it. You said you had 1 second. They have 1 second to go. You had 1 second to go at that exact point. So that was fabulous. But let me just reset the timer. And now the ticking clock has begun, and we are in the pull to open commentary, which we're going to complete in 42 minutes. So first question to you, Pete: who has had more number ones, the Beatles or Elvis?
I don't know. Are we talking London 1965 Beatles?
Can we just get right there? Because I would like to get my Beatles nerdery out of the way.
Do it.
Okay.
I want to know the real answer to this question.
So the format is, so the doors will only open if the security questions are answered. So, which sounds fun in concept, and then in execution, it becomes, as Martha said, just a stupid pub quiz. And, you know, pro tip, Chris Chibnall, saying something that you've decided to do in your script is stupid, you know, doesn't actually help sell it to us, the audience, because it is kind of a stupid pub quiz, especially as you come to this question. So I like the happy primes. The doctor gets a question about a sequence of numbers. He immediately identifies them as happy primes. That seems like way too hard for the pub quiz level that we're talking about here. But okay, it's happy primes. It's Doctor Who. I learned something about math. Great.
Right.
Happy numbers, prime numbers. Love it. Then we get the question of who has had more number ones in the pre-download era, which, first of all, why would you say that in the far future? Beatles or the Elvis? Or Elvis or the Beatles or the Elvis? And now they specify the Beavis. Which, yes, we all remember those on itself. And it is actually, it's only correct. The answer that Martha comes up with by phoning her mother and getting her mum to go on the internet, which is just like totally against the spirit of pub quizzes, Martha.
They say that,
which is again, again, this is what we're learning, and what Chris Chibnall will learn in the Chris Chibnall era is just saying it doesn't actually help us get over the suspension of disbelief. Just saying what the problem is. But anyway, so yes, it is true. We're talking about UK, right? First of all, like, why would it just be UK number ones that the Starship would be using in the far future? But yes, in the pre-download era, Elvis had 18, Beatles had 17. The Beatles have now tied Elvis, by the way, because of the number one signal now and then.
That's the AI generated one or AI assisted one?
AI assisted one, yes, that came out at the end of last year, debuting on the UK charts at number 42.
But that's post or middle download era? I don't know.
Yeah, I know. It kind of gets spoiled by the fact that it is. But like, why choose the download era? But if you do the US charts, by the way, pre-download era, it's the other way around. The Beatles win. They have 20 to Elvis's 6, but that's because the Billboard Hot 100 only started after a lot of Elvis's big hits in 56.
Okay, well that's there we go. Great Beatles nerdery going on there. Thank you, everyone, for this joining us for this debut episode of Chris's Music History Corner.
I'm so sorry about that.
I like these little striations we pull out in Pull to Open, because again, we can get arrive at things we disagree on. I actually really like the pub quiz thing.
Oh my
because
God.
Okay. I think it's a neat balance of fun and tension building. And it's because it is this pub quiz thing, I feel like it's very relatable. Because one, we all go to pub quizzes and we get it, but also the idea that you set a password for yourself and you forget it is something everyone has dealt with. And you probably thought of some clever turn of phrase or, you know, different, like, you know, no one, I mean, you might use a password manager and a lot of people do now, but I think a lot of people don't and just kind of have these phrases that they store somewhere in a Google Doc or something.
Right.
And it's usually something you think you'll remember and then you never do. And that is kind of that thing. But I love adding that simple idea to a life and death situation. And you're kind of there with Martha and the other guy. And like, I really need to know this. I got one shot at it. It just sort of like ups that tension in a, I would say, believable in the moment way. I wouldn't say it's a believable way, but that's kind of what this episode has to do. It has to create that tension, that suspense, and it has to keep the pace up well enough that you're not stopping to think about it. And I think it primarily succeeds in doing that. So yeah, it's a bit silly, but I think it works.
Well, that's interesting. I'm glad that we have a full-on disagreement about 42, because I had one of those experiences where I watched it, hadn't watched it since it came out, and had a worse experience than I did the first time. Maybe it's knowing that Chris Chibnall wrote it and seeing in this a lot of problems from the Chris Chibnall era in Embryo, right? Mm. And I think the pub quiz is part of it. You know, we've gone over that, but it's essentially the fact that he's trying to do too many things here, and he has this great idea of the ticking clock, which is it's perfect for a Doctor Who episode. Why, you know, that's like catnip for RTD coming up with that idea. Oh, I want to do something like 24. You know, now our episodes are this long. Let's call it 42, and that'll be a Douglas Adams reference as well. And you know, that will reference all the Douglas Adams history and Doctor Who and whatever. Yeah, of course, you want to go for that. But like the ticking, I forget at several points of this episode there even is a ticking clock. You know, it just sort of comes in and they're like, oh, impact in 20 minutes. And you're like, oh, yeah, there's a ticking clock in this. But you don't get that sort of real-time feel from it because you're distracted by suddenly we're in a pub quiz, you know. By the way, I just want to say, like, maybe it's just that we didn't have enough security questions at the time, but it sort of feels like security questions that you would know that you would know the answer to would be a better thing than these really complex questions, including one that someone set who is no longer a member of the crew.
Yeah, exactly. So that again, if you scrutinize that and you get a chance to do it, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. I totally agree. But again, like I think it does pace it well enough that you're good. And also, like, it detours from that. Like, that's interesting for about 5 minutes, and then it's not interesting. And I think it's very smart that they detour Martha and the guy into the escape pod and give them a different danger. And you kind of blink and you miss it. Like, the other two people go on and keep doing the doors and apparently are successful because they eventually get to the bridge, but they don't really show a lot of that. So you kind of, like, while they're in the thing, if you miss that, you might think, oh, there's no hope now.
Right.
Like, if this is a real time thing, now they're spending 10 or 15 minutes in this pod and coming back. It's, I think everyone's dead.
So you're totally distracted by that. I would love it, by the way, if we just cut back to the other two and show that it's not a problem now because all the doors, like all the control panels, have little sticky notes on them with the password written on them.
What luck!
Just in case you forget. I love that idea. Or they go in with a big book of pub quizzes, of pub quiz answers, like, you know, they're carrying that in on their data pad or something.
Here's the thing. I think 42, you know, kind of makes it easy on itself in some way by giving that premise right off the bat that it's like, oh, we have this ticking clock, we have this ship going to crash into the sun situation, and they kind of fill it in with good but not great stuff. That's kind of my you know, very quick review of 42, where they have some fun stuff with the pub quiz. There's sort of zombie-like monsters that add some suspense, but there's really not much to them, and they're not really that interesting. And they appear to be
wearing a knockoff stormtrooper helmet.
Yeah, or whatever that. Yeah, right. It's either a stormtrooper. Or it's kind of like the bounty hunter guy, right, from Return of the Jedi or something. You know, that's what I kind of thought it was. Oh no, I see what you mean, because it's more like the speeder bike guys. Yeah, whatever. It's like a futury helmet.
Yeah, maybe I've covered too much Star Wars stuff, but I really saw like, oh, this is the guy who comes to Star Wars Celebration with his, like, he didn't follow the instructions on how you construct a Stormtrooper helmet. He's got this sort of just crappy knockoff version that's actually kind of interesting. But then, like, he ran out of time to do gloves, so he's just, like, got his dad's gardening gloves, which is kind of what the villain looks like he has here. And it is cool. Like, okay, let's talk about things. I do like the sort of the Cyclops eyes thing. Mm-hmm. That's cool. Doesn't feel like we've had that enough in Doctor Who.
Yeah, and I do like it because I don't think the star is thinking clearly. Like, I mean, we could get into sort of the ridiculousness of the star being a living thing or whatever. But again, it's a premise and you kind of have to go with it for Doctor Who. And even though it's not very logical to put on a helmet and block your weapon, and then what? Like, why not just keep your eyes out? And if you're scared of destroying things, just keep your eyes closed. But I guess, I don't know. You don't want to take it apart too much because then I guess the people have to see. But I think the point is the star wants revenge.
Yeah.
And so it wants to stalk them and terrify them and make them frightened and sort of slowly come up to them with this thing. I think it's really trying to be a horror movie villain.
Mm.
And I think that's okay. So those kind of work. But again, I don't think, you know, my shorthand of this is nothing in this episode rises above what I would call an 8. And that's only the best, absolute best parts. The monsters are more like a 5 or a 4 because totally unmemorable. They don't do anything interesting. They don't kill. Well, they kill people in a slightly interesting way. I do like the sort of shadow or silhouette they leave. That's actually kind of eerie when they sort of completely vaporize them. And you might think even for a second just how painful and horrifying that is to die that way, because you're obviously burned to death into nothingness.
Yeah. Given a second to think about that. I think that's part of the problem that it does. Even though it's in real time, it doesn't feel like it has a lot of room to breathe. There's so much going on. You barely even get to know the crew. You don't really care. I mean, I didn't really care about the captain and her lover because we never got to see them together in happier times.
Yeah, I agree. I think, again, the cast is very capable, but there's just not enough here. And there's maybe one too many, maybe probably two too many crew members for this length of an episode. And there's you know, they want to spend the time on Martha, and I'll get to that in a minute. But I do think there's sort of a shell of something or a skeleton of something here. And I do think the captain is probably the only one you get to know a little bit. So I guess that's Captain McDonnell.
Yeah.
And you get the sense that she's not a very good captain or a very good person.
She's certainly cutting corners there and using a legal scoop. And by the way, 30 minutes to impact. Yeah, she's, but you don't really get like it's a blink and you miss it thing. And then, you know, speaking of problems with the Tribunal era, I kind of got Orphan 55 vibes here with this sort of heavy handed yet muddled environmental message.
Yeah, agreed.
My immediate reaction was to go full faux conservative. This is what I wrote. What, we can't even mine the sun now? Those helio wokes are getting out of control.
I think that's a fair criticism because I think it's a very confused thing because there's actually like two things that are unrelated, which is one, they're using like illegal scoops or fusion scoops or whatever the doctor calls them, which seems totally unrelated to the fact that they're just mining a sun for something. And you're right, it's confusing because it's like, well, I think anyone would make that mistake, not knowing, like, not thinking that a star was a living thing. And fair enough, it is. But I totally, like, I have a lot of sympathy for them. Like, oh, how are we to know? Like, you know, if you're digging a hole in the ground, you're not like, am I hurting the earth? Like, it's just the freaking sun.
It's the sun, for goodness sake. It's got so much energy. Can't we just mine it a little bit? And by the way, freaking hypocritical liberals with their solar panels, are you not hurting the sun that way? You know, absorbing all its light? I don't know. It just, it's a thing you have to think through. And you're just like, what is the message here? Like, don't go drilling on the sun, kids.
Yeah, I know. And it seems like the doctor's surprised too, right? Like, this is the first time he's encountered like a sun creature or what have you.
And then it lives in him, but he's got like nothing to say about like what creature this is. I don't think it even gets named. Right. He doesn't even name it the boneless, the shadowless, maybe.
The gaseous?
Yeah. I would love to see a scene at the end where he's in the TARDIS with Martha and they're kind of workshopping names for like what this creature could be called.
The flare. I got it.
No, the flash. Nailed the it. Flash. No.
I mean, Doctor Who, I mean, no stranger to environmental messaging. It's been done much, much better before. And I think the one that, you know, there's been a lot of them, but Inferno came to mind just because
Heat.
And I was like, Inferno did this way better with better characters. Certainly had a lot more time to stretch out. But yeah
I think if Chris Chibnall's pitch for this had been, it's like Inferno, but on the sun, RTD might have been a little more like, let's go back and take this back and bring it back to me in season 4, which, by the way, is when Chibnall was originally supposed to do his episode. This was kind of moved forward. And the timing was actually very unfortunate because do you remember the Danny Boyle movie Sunshine?
I remember it coming out. I don't remember seeing it because I didn't.
Yeah, you did. And unfortunately, not enough people did because it was a box office bomb, but it was a critical hit. And it came out in the UK, at least, with Alex Boyle doing Danny Boyle doing the direction, Alex Garland, who he'd collaborated with on The Beach in 28 Days Later, starring the Ninth Doctor, Chris Eccleston. And this came out just a month before 42 in the UK. And the 42 itself was delayed by the Eurovision Song Contest final. So if I was Chris Chibnall or RTD, I'd be just tearing my hair out as like more and more people go to the movie theater to see Sunshine, although apparently not enough did. You know, while you're waiting to show them this very, very similar story.
Right.
So Sunshine is kind of the opposite. Well, it's about our own sun, and it's just in the near future. And it's actually the opposite problem, that the sun is going out and they have to drop massive fusion bombs in it to keep it going. So kind of stoking the fire, as it were. Stars Chris Evans. It's wild. Nice. It's got Chris Evans, Benedict Wong. Like, you know, Marvel stars you couldn't get together in a movie now if you tried. And Kieran Murphy, you know, Oppenheimer.
Of course.
Is in it as well as a physicist. This is the first time he was a physicist. Apparently this movie turned him into an atheist. Sunshine. I recommend it. I actually recommend it more highly than 42, but to be fair to 42, it does look very beautiful.
Yeah, 42 is great. I think they did a great job on the special effects, and particularly the scene where Tennant has to go out of the ship and then gets infected by the sun.
Yes.
That looks really, really good. And again, it's the pacing of it. It's all about that tension, him desperately trying to save Martha. You're not even thinking about how this is kind of ridiculous that they put this big manual lever on the outside of the ship for some reason, because that's where all the manual stuff happens, I guess. And then he has to really reach, and they don't even put it within like an arm's length of the hatch. He has to like lean all the way out without a tether and pull this thing out to get it to remagnetize, I guess, and bring her back. But I like that. I mean, RTD is very wise, and he's said this, I think even about this episode, that, you know, you need to really convey the pain and the sacrifice, and you need to, it needs to be physical sometimes. And I really like, just as a comparison, similarly, we talked about in, the first one with Donna, the Runaway Bride.
Runaway Bride.
And the fact that when the TARDIS is flying like a fighter jet alongside traffic, that is a very sort of physically taxing thing for the Doctor to get the TARDIS to do that. He's doing all this manual stuff with the console, and it's like really, really smart storytelling to sort of convey this is a big deal, and it involves a lot of sort of sacrifice on the lead's part. And I think that works really well here.
It does. To your point, I mean, it does look beautiful. And I want to say it's also, there's a great sound decision as well, which is to have none. At that moment where the pod is detaching.
Oh, so good. Yeah. It's probably the best moment in the whole damn thing.
Yeah, it really is.
He's yelling, "I'll save you," and she can't hear him.
I got Lost vibes in that moment. If you remember Lost, you saw that not Penny's boat, you know, mm-hmm. that moment that really kind of connected to. So, you know, again, probably an homage a little bit, but also really beautiful. And Doctor Who doesn't really do that enough with the no sound in space thing. It can be really effective.
Well, I also like it because Tennant does a really good reading of that line, mm-hmm. and he's clearly convincing himself. You know, he has that sort of hint of uncertainty because he's so desperate to save her. I'll save you, but he also knows he might not, right? Like, I love that this is part of Doctor Who where it's like, again, we're pretty confident. Like, if you have some length distance from the show, you're pretty confident that our leads will survive till the end.
Yes, yes.
But they get you to think about it here for a second. And it's thanks to moments like this and Tennant. Yeah, it was really great.
It is a lovely moment, although it's sort of a bit weird that Martha, like, can't hear what he's saying or can't make out what he's saying. Like, he's doing like lip reading for dummies. He's like, the way the Tennant moves his mouth in that scene is like, I'll save you. And she's looking at him like, what
o'clock?
She's like, what? I'll shave you. I didn't know we had this sort of relationship, Doctor. I don't know what you're saying. What could you possibly be saying in this situation? So there's a bit of that. And it's sort of a bit cheesy that she then calls her mum. Although I do like the Harold Saxon bits of this episode. And that her mum is there on election day.
Yeah, that's true. The Saxon stuff I almost forgot about. And when you kind of get the hints of it earlier and then you see the people, you kind of see the woman in the background earlier and then you see the whole confiscating the phone thing. So that's all cool. I think it's a smart way to weave the arc plot into the actual plot with the whole phone thing. And I think that really worked. And again, as a Doctor Who fan, you admire the cleverness of it because obviously he gave this same universal roaming upgrade
super
to Rose.
Fun.
And now she has it, and now it sort of both drives that that arc plot, but also gives that nice little moment. I probably, again, it was a little cheesy, but it is, I think, one of the things that RTD does well. I think I would suspect the first draft of this maybe didn't work so well, just because I feel like Chibnall doesn't get it as quality. I don't know. Maybe it's Chibnall. Maybe I'd be curious because
it feels a bit Chibnall to me because it's a bit just sort of like, you know, remember kids to tell your mum you love her. You know, it's basically that's the moral of that scene. I know I don't say it enough. I never think of it, but I really love you, mum. It just sort of like my eyes rolled so hard.
I know, but it's just. I didn't roll them. No, I actually didn't mind it because what else are you going to say, right? I mean, she's not a poet and she's not going to tell her I'm in space and I might die. It's you know, that's what you fall back on. And I think it is, again, it's more about like selling us on the real peril and the importance of her not shying away from this life at the end because of that peril, but also giving that little connection with the dude there as well, about just a couple of humans who are probably going to die having a moment together. So, I thought it was
the
fun.
Dude who almost died with her and got a kiss from Martha first.
Yeah,
troubles.
Baby.
Yeah.
Moochies.
He found something to believe in, all right. But let's talk about that phone. I do want to talk about the whole superphone concept.
Okay.
Which I kind of
love.
Not
where I thought we were going, but okay.
I kind of love it and I kind of hate it. Like, but also, let's talk about it just first in the context of the show show and continuity. So Rose gets it straight away. She gets it at End of the World. Her first real trip in the TARDIS. Martha doesn't get it till mid-season.
This is the whole thing. She was supposed to be around for a single trip. And the Doctor kept stretching it out. And again, this is her first real companion episode. And End of the World was with Rose, right? So I think there is an equivalence here. Like, you know, if you're a real companion, you get one of these things. And if you're not, probably not so much.
Yeah. Donna gets it in the Doctor's daughter.
Okay.
So she has to wait. So there's definitely a clip. And then Amy and Clara apparently have it, you know, from the start, and they just sort of get off screen.
Also needed the Twitter upgrade. They needed not just roaming, but the data. So, yeah.
But I think there you can draw a connection between how soon the companion gets it and how much the Doctor fancies that companion.
I suppose.
Yeah. You know, Rose gets it early and Martha and Donna not so much. But let's talk about the concept of it itself. I both love it and hate it. I want to outline the reasons for both, and then I want to get your take. The reason I love the idea of the superphone is that because science fiction has sort of had a hard time with the existence of smartphones. Like, it just, you know, it kind of makes moot so much science fiction of the past that it's weird, right? Star Wars or Star Trek or whatever, it'd be so much different if they just, every companion of the crew just had a phone they could put to their ear at any moment, or text each other, or, like, look up directions, or, like, yeah. So we're struggling with the smartphone in the science fiction realm. So this is kind of at least a way to tackle it, and it's a bit fun, and it's sort of very Doctor Who-ish and loosey-goosey. But for me, it brings up so many questions. Like, where are you? Are you calling the point where you last were on Earth? Like, is that the only thing you can do? Does it prevent you from calling your own future? You know, because it would have to do that, or does it? Like, I mean, why? If it doesn't, then why can't you learn your own future or otherwise save the day, like bootstrap paradox style? Google it by phoning a friend. Like, or even phoning the Doctor in the future.
Okay, we're doing this? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, here's how I would, you know, using the evidence on screen, here's how it works. So it's obviously lined up with your personal time. And I think the time it calls sort of advances with you and your chronological time with the Doctor until you return, and then it resets. Because clearly Rose jumped forward a year and she wasn't then calling her mom 8 months or 9 months previous, right? Then suddenly, as soon as she was back, it just would recalibrate every time. So I think that's how that works. Yeah, that's how it works.
So, okay, fair enough. I just, like, is that the Doctor's own limitation putting it? Because that involves time travel. That involves sending a phone signal through time. So you could, in theory, call your own future, but the Doctor's put some killjoy who won't let you do that. Is that what we're saying?
It's possible. I don't think it's occurred to any companion to call themselves. And
well, if maybe they should be a little more narcissistic.
Well, the thing is, it's their phone. He doesn't give them a different phone. He actually upgrades their own phone with this technology. So how would you even do that?
How would you even call yourself?
And you've already sort of been taken out of time. And I know Doctor Who's inconsistent about this because you have things like Amy and Rory seeing themselves in the future in Hungry Earth and Cold Blood. But if you're taken out of time and you're with the Doctor, your future is arguably in flux. So maybe there isn't really something to call, or you're sort of permanently blocked by doing that, even if you could. So, yeah. In fact, because it's what happens if you're a companion, and I know this doesn't happen that often, but if you are returned to your proper time and space, typically it's a little after you jumped on. So you there's a gap there, and it can change. I mean, you know, there's different, everyone's different, because Ben and Polly, I think, came back same day, Ian and Barbara 2 years later, et cetera, et cetera. So that gap, you might mistake being dead or something if you couldn't reach yourself, but really you're just traveling with the Doctor. He returned you a little later.
Well, because it's the Doctor, like, the precision of what you're talking about seems so unusual. I'm going to say there's got to be some Sarah Jane and Aberdeen moment here. And perhaps it's when you get back and you look at your phone bill and you realize that because it was your own phone, you've been charged roaming.
Yeah, but it's all in Grotzitz, so it's no big. Okay.
But I just love the idea of, like, a short trip where, like, old companions, like, look at their phone bill, like, when they've stopped traveling in the TARDIS. What? Two mobile charges? What?
All right, are we done with the phone yet?
Yes. Okay. Thank you. Done. I don't even need to get into the TARDIS key that Martha gets at the end and, like, how immediately that's superseded by clicking your fingers.
So I just want to say one thing I do like about this episode, that I think it is unfortunately probably too derivative of, is the industrial look, or rather it's a derivative aspect of the show, which is to say it's clearly done in this similar aesthetic to Impossible Planet and the Satan Pit, right down
to the space. Absolutely intentional. Yeah.
Totally intentional. And, you know, obviously working class people, all of the sort of alien, first alien vibes of that kind of idea, this cavernous spaceship that, you know, the roughnecks are manning. And the I think it's actually really good. It's just that because it's so derivative and that two-parter was just the previous season, we all kind of shrugged, right? We're all just kind of, you know, that's nice. Yeah, that's kind of what I'd go for. But I do think it's sort of unnecessarily dinged for that. Like, it's actually a really good-looking production value-wise episode, and that's one good aspect of it.
Absolutely. For its time, it does look beautiful. All right. Well, we are now 30 minutes into our commentary, and I don't know. I'm kind of feeling like we've reached the final bulkhead here.
Well, we've talked a bit about Martha, but I don't think we've talked quite enough about her relationship with the Doctor. And I think we need to decide whether this is a good episode or not for Martha. And I actually would say it's pretty good because she gets that upgrade from the companion, and she is given, it's sort of something the Doctor bestows upon her. And there's a little bit of weirdness to that, particularly in the final scene where the Doctor's clearly not okay from his encounter with the sun infection. And he, again, I think Tennant, he's so good. I mean, like, he plays these things very well. And I think if there's any issue, it's that the material wasn't quite enough there for him. So in other words, like, I would have liked to unpack that even more and like what happened to him through this, but he just sort of has that moment in the TARDIS where he's just like, I need a second here. And she's kind of looking at him and wants to be there for him. And he's like, no, I'm fine. I'm good. And then she feels rejected again, but then he realizes he can make her feel better by giving her the key, and he does, and she does feel better. And again, I'm not arguing any of this is particularly healthy in terms of Martha's arc. And I think the arc plays that out, you know, obviously she leaves because the feelings aren't mutual. But within that arc, I think it's a pretty good way they played it here in terms of the dynamic. It makes total sense.
It's nice that we get a situation where someone fancies Martha in the way that Martha fancies the Doctor. She gets someone to moon over her in the form of Riley. The quite attractive looking stubble on that guy. Gotta say.
Everyone's got stubble. Really,
yeah, I know. Very, very great stubble. Like, something about being on these ships in the future. There's obviously some like robo barbers somewhere on the ship that just comes in, gives you that 4-day scruff. So it's nice. It's nice for her to be mooned over. You've got to think though that as a doctor, she would be more concerned about this thing that infected the Doctor afterwards, in terms of aftercare. Like, you know. At least give him some, paracetamol.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell him to call you in the morning.
Yeah, I mean, she is very concerned about him. I think we could talk about that sequence so earlier where the Doctor gets infected. And now Tennant kind of goes way over. Like, I'm not actually sure if this was the best choice, but he's clearly struggling. I think he's doing, he does it pretty well. But the bit where he says, "Burn with me, Martha," which is probably, in addition to the "I'll save you," that line is probably the supposedly the big payoff. And it works really well. The thing is, this is, again, I think, evidence of Chibnall and the way he kind of cheats. Like, it's a bit of a cheat, because when this happened to Corwin earlier, the Doctor explicitly makes clear he's gone. Like, there's nothing left of him. And that would seem to be the moment that happens to the Doctor. And you would think, oh my God, now he's dead. But I guess they have a get out of jail free card. I mean, other than him just being a Time Lord, that after he says "burn with me," he's sort of still screaming, right? It's like the thing's bursting through a bit, but not fully. So I don't know. I felt like it was cheating a little bit, though, by giving you the payoff line that's supposed to make you really concerned that the Doctor's dead and now is a sun creature, but not, you know what I mean? It's kind of like trying to have its cake and eat it too.
And he brings up regeneration, and Martha is surprisingly incurious about it. Right? She's like, we're just not going to let that. He's like, this thing that happens before I die. She's like, we're not going to let that happen. Maybe she could follow up on that later. You know, that's kind of an interesting thing to say. that a companion might want to get more information on. He needs to hand her some pamphlets when she gets back into the TARDIS, like what you need to know about Time Lord regeneration.
There needs to be like a LinkedIn course that you could take when you are interested in becoming a companion.
Yes. And how, by the way, given that they've mentioned Elvis in this episode so much, you know, specifically referencing the Little Less Conversation remix that we all know and love, how did you not license Hunk of Burning Love? Like that would have been just such a perfect thing somewhere in this episode.
Well, I love the Here Comes the Sun bit.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, it's give nice me one. All the dad jokes all at once right here. That's what I'll mine that star for, man. I'm walking on sunshine.
You don't realize you're taking the dad jokes. You're scooping out its heart. Oh, dear.
Thing I do want to ding the production values for, though, the printouts. Like, they're in the med bay, and the doctor's literally looking at pieces of paper or sort of overhead projector thingies. And he's like, what? Isn't this like the 45th century or something? Like, why are they still walking around with little cards and stuff?
I know. Why is, you know, again, it's sort of like we've got smartphones involved here. No one in the ship has a smartphone. Apparently they're out of vogue by the far future. Like, and everyone's using like, you know, wall mounted communication system again.
Is this like, it's a flip phone though, isn't it? Isn't he have like, so it's not quite smart. It's not quite like an iPhone. This is like 2007, right?
Yes, super phone. Although we did say smartphone for things that were like the Black
Mirror
smartphone.
Yeah. Hard to remember, certainly. But we did think that was a smartphone.
We did.
It got data, so arguably, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, there's a lot of stuff like that. There's like, you know, the auxiliary controls are at the front of the ship, and that's why they have to make it through all these buckets. Oh, really? So the auxiliary controls can't be controlled by it from any screen, you know, or from my smartphone using these auxiliary control apps. Like,
yeah, but, and I don't know, all deadlock sealed.
Who is designing spaceships in the future? Like, they've really gone backwards in a big way in terms of software.
And if deadlock seals are so cheap, you could put them on every single door in your freighter. Like, what hope does the sonic screwdriver have in the far future, really?
Yeah, I don't know. It just, there are too many doors in this, and I feel like we've gone through too many doors. I know we're called Pull to Open, and you know, we should be sponsored by Home Depot or some sort of, you know, company that sells you doors, but like, yeah, can we just see less doors, less big bulkheady spacey doors in Doctor Who? Sorry, I'm getting perilously close to making a request of the randomizer here, and I know we shouldn't do that. So I will just mention one thing which does, the randomizer may have been making a very obscure reference to. Did you see that there's a prequel, a written prequel to 42, that takes you from 46 minutes up until 42 minutes? Because we're all watching 42 thinking, oh, well, what happened in the previous 4 minutes? Well,
yeah.
It is written by a writer named Joseph Lister, which is so connected to Joseph Lister, who the Doctor studied under in the moon base. We were told that I thought, wow, that's a wild random connection. I read it. It's okay. You know, if you're a big 42 fan, you haven't read the prequel, go grab it.
You know, it's funny. I read it, in preparation for this. And all I can think is Joseph Lister is a big fan of Firefly, because that's kind of what I got the vibe of. It's a little like, it reminded me of, because it's one of the bit players, the first person who gets killed by Corwin is narrating it essentially. And she talks about how she came on board the ship and how she sort of gave the impression she was working class, but she's not. And her mother actually owns a lot of stuff on whatever planet she's from. And, you know, there's a little bit about how she was accepted by some of them and not others. But I remember an episode of Firefly talking about how their engineer, I forget the name of the character, but it was played by Jewel Sate on the show. And there's a lot of the sort of background there for that character. And it sort of really fleshes out sort of the what's going on. So to the point that we made earlier, that there's not enough here to really care about these characters. Had this been somehow part of the episode, or maybe told in flashback in some way,
yes,
that might have added a little more there. And yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, but, and you know what? Vinette Robinson's character would have been perhaps a bit more memorable, and then we would have immediately said that, yay, we got a Vinette Robinson bingo. Because, of course, she will come back in the Chibnall era to play Rosa Parks.
Oh, that's right. Rosa, yes. Yeah. I was wondering, actually, where I saw her before. I was like, she looks familiar.
Yeah.
She dies pretty early, too.
She dies pretty early. Not a character that sticks in the brain. She might be the first one to die.
Because the one who narrates the story is the character is Erina Lesak. And that was played by Rebecca Oldfield, but she's not in it much. She's the one who runs through at the very beginning of like, who's closing the doors?
Computer. Sort of like that. It's really weird. Well, the ticking clock is now giving us a whole 3.5 minutes before we switch to the four questions.
Okay.
And so we're kind of running out of steam here, but I do want to mention that
I see what you did there, steam.
So do you remember in the moon base, they had a rescue crew that fell into the sun?
Yes, that's correct.
And it was just sort of like, we didn't even mention this in the moon base last week of like that. But I remember thinking that seems a bit sort of precipitous, Doctor, that you've just decided that they're doomed now. Like they're on that poor rescue crew.
Right.
He's falling into the sun. There's nothing you can do, and it's going to happen in many days' time, but you're just going to let them die?
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, he couldn't really steer the TARDIS very well in those days. So
that's a good point.
Yeah, that was a tough one. I admire that episode and actually that era of Doctor Who for being clear about how hard space travel is and that how much fuel you need. Because if you remember, there was a similar resolution in the Seeds of Death with the Ice Warriors craft that ended up in an orbit around the sun and they all died. And here we're in an orbit around the sun. I mean, it's like steer clear of the suns, guys, and also make sure you have enough engines and fuel to get out of there. And if you absolutely have to, don't mind the sun because it might be a living thing.
And because you might just get to this point, is it like 42 minutes is like that? That's when you hit the event horizon of the sun and there's really no way you can pull out of it at that point. Like it doesn't seem ticking clocky enough for me.
Yeah. I mean, you know, again, if you unpeel this, it's not a lot of things fall apart, but I couldn't quite tell. I know what you mean. They're not actually literally going to fall into the sun. Mm. Like there's an actual physical thing they're going to hit. It's just either more that they hit a point where their heat shielding can no longer withstand the intense heat coming from it. That's kind of what I thought. It's 42 minutes until the heat shielding actually fails. I forget what they actually say. I think one or the other.
Some previously unseen Scottish member of the crew rushes in and shouts, "The heat shield's gonna hold, Captain!"
There's sections of the ship that are hotter than others. So where the TARDIS is, like it was kind of okay for a minute, and then they come out and now it's 3,000 degrees in there. And well, wait a minute. Like, does that mean it's getting hotter every second? And at what point does it just start melting the hull? I guess.
Well,
yeah.
Wait a minute, because we have just now hit. That's it. Time. That's 42 full minutes of commentary after TLDW.
And we've got to cut right to the four questions to Doomsday. First question: why did the randomizer take us here?
From the moon to the sun. Yes.
There you go. That's it. Boom. Done.
I think the randomizer is sort of trying to remind us of that crew, you know, the rescue crew, hashtag RIP rescue crew. They could have been saved is what it's saying here. It wants us to remember them. I feel like there's a connection. I mean, you may have changed my mind on this point, but I felt like there was a connection between the time scanner at the very end of the moon base and the superphone. They both sort of had this potential looking forward in time problem.
Kind of.
And also, so we talked about this last week about the whole base under siege problem of the Doctor walks in and is sort of has to be either immediately accepted or challenged, right? Mm-hmm. You know, in any scenario, older or new who, and that new who sort of gets over it by using the psychic paper. Well, here's an example of the Doctor not using the psychic paper, but just walking straight in and kind of just being accepted. Like they don't go through the whole challenge of identity that they do with the moon base.
Yeah, and I think it's actually something it shares with the Impossible Planet and the Satan Pit. I mentioned in that one that they were kind of quickly accepted and not thrown in a jail cell somewhere, which was kind of refreshing. I think in this one, that's okay. Again, it's a burning house, quite literally, and it's, you know, you just don't have time to start taking prisoners, and the guy looks like he might be able to help. So, you know, right. I think that's the decision most of us would make in the captain's position.
Yeah. Randomizer just wanted to make us look bad by pointing out that they don't always use the psychic paper in that situation in New Who either. I do also have a connection with Amy's choice in that this is a sort of a pivot episode. This is what RTD was thinking about it as a pivot episode for Martha, where she really becomes accepted as a full companion, you know, frequent flyer privileges, all of that, which is very similar to Amy's choice, where Rory becomes a real companion. Because of the events of that. So that's an interesting connection. Do you have any others?
I think the moon base was a little too clean for the randomizer's taste. So he wanted to go to something, again, a little more grimy, a little more working class, a little more industrial.
That's right.
Here we are at 42. And it's not quite base under siege, but it is base besieged, or anyway, it's a different base. And there's people walking around trying to kill people. So it's kind of a similar format. Also, Martha gets to save the doctor. And of course, he saves her too, but she gets to have sort of her hero moment, which, you know,
right.
a little bit like a Martha cocktail, you might say.
Indeed, just like Polly and the Polly cocktail in the moon base. I love it. Okay, might be time to move on to
the second question, which is, what if the evil plot had succeeded?
Okay, so the evil plot is to scoop out the heart of the sun that's actually a living creature.
Well, I guess like that's one evil plot is the captain's evil plot, because that's the thing. They're mining this thing illegally or whatever, and they're violating the star. You could argue it's just more straightforward that the star is the evil plot that just wants to kill them, and it succeeds and vaporizes enough, and then presumably gets its particles back just by virtue of the ship falling back in. So it works out well for the star. Everyone else gets vaporized.
I had a slightly different take, but also ends with everyone getting vaporized. But it, just that the sun is like it has more of a bee sting kind of mechanism where it can just go nuclear, right? It can go
supernova.
Big bada boom.
Like a big flare, so to speak.
Yes. Yeah. And just like it's a bee sting, like it kills the sun as well. By this form of suicide, I guess it protects other suns or other star-based creatures. Like, this is the problem with the fact that the Doctor doesn't really tell us anything about, like, what is this creature? Where do they live in other suns? Is there one in our sun as well? Should we not mind the sun, Doctor? You know, it'd be good to know this information.
We should check. Check every sun for living creatures. Somehow,
but like maybe the signal of the supernova would signal all of the other suns that have creatures living inside them to go supernova as well. And, you know, if they detect any creatures in the vicinity around them. So, yeah, dark, literally. Yeah.
Well, I thought maybe if the evil plot's the captains and you imagine it succeeding, it would be them getting away with the particles. So somehow the engines getting turned on gives them enough power for them to actually leave with the stuff they've mined.
Yep.
But what that would mean is the doctor stays infected. So he gets fully taken over. And then you have to sort of answer, well, does he regenerate then? Or do we just have permanent tenant star beast? Star beast, hey, how about that?
Hey, a tenant in the star beast. Now there's an idea. RTD, call us.
So basically what happens is the 10th doctor becomes a Doctor Who monster that just is constantly saying, burn with me.
Or we have to wait until Journey's End, and he kind of, you know, it's the Metacrisis Doctor, the half human Doctor, who actually takes on the Star Beast, the Sun creature inside.
I like calling him the Star Beast. Let's call him the Star Beast. It's basically Tenant Sun Guy's the Star Beast, and he's more it's just killing people, so he's more like Jason or Michael Myers or something. Doctor Who becomes a slasher movie with someone vaporizing folks with his eyes.
I mean, basically, he just becomes like Cyclops in the X-Men. So, like, he just can't open his eyes. Or he has to wear sunglasses. So, basically, he turns into Dr. Disco a little bit early.
So, okay.
And, yeah, and he has to just keep wearing those glasses until he can metacrisis Dr. Way out of that. The only question is whether Donna would actually even have anything to do with him if he's wearing bloody dark glasses all the time.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, she'd go for it. Why not?
Yeah, like, Martha would still moon over him, of course, but yeah. But Donna, don't know.
All right, well, we ponder that later. We'll ponder something else now, and that is the third question, which is, where is the Clara Splinter? Clara Oswald, of course, splintered in time at the end of the name of the Doctor. She's somewhere in every single Doctor Who story. Where is she in 42?
Well, you might think that she's a missing crew member or a previous crew member.
Okay. They don't seem to be anyone missing, though.
Yeah.
It's just the people there.
Yeah, that's kind of a problem, which is why I have her not on board at all. Yeah. I have her back on Earth in the pre-download era of music, making sure that Elvis has more UK number ones than the Beatles.
How does she do that? Is she a producer?
She's the producer, or she's just the person who encourages, because the reason that Elvis has more number ones is because of Little Less Conversation, the remix, which was done by a DJ called Junkie XL, which was in some sort of video game soundtrack. I think it was on FIFA. And then that's how it took off. They made it, the Elvis Presley estate was like, oh, well, I guess we'll put this on the number ones album. They made him change the Junkie XL, change his name to JXL. So there's many points in that where, you know, Clara could come along as like a music producer and be like, no, stick this on the album, or like, you know, stick this in the video game. It's going to be great. Let's get this known. Let's get this to number one because of a ship many centuries in the future. You know, this needs to be the correct answer.
Nice, I'll take that. I actually had her in the future, not on board, but as a space engineer designing escape pods. So she's like, no, guys, we got to put this manual remagnetizing control on the outer hull. And she just tells her boss that it's like, you know what? People always drop skate pods in space dock. That's why you want it on the outer hull, because you don't want people to come in to the actual ship. It's a big security problem. If they drop the thing inside in the space dock, you just remagnetize and put it right back on. No one's going to use it when the ship's actually out there. It's totally fine. And then, of course, she's really doing this because she knows the Doctor's really going to need that control right there and, you know, earn it and also discover that this thing's a star beast by doing that. Mm. So, hey.
I think she also takes out the intercom system from the pod so that they have that I can't hear you moment. So that the Doctor's extra motivated to save Martha.
Nice.
Because he can't just leave it like that.
All right, folks, it is time for the final question, the ultimate question, the only question that matters for 42. What did we think of this story? The Pull to Open rating system has 6 ratings. There's the Dalek, which we give to a good episode of Doctor Who. The Ogron, which we give to an irredeemably bad episode of Doctor Who. The Professor Hayter, which is a not-so-good episode, but hey, at least they tried something. The Viscount Banger, which we reserve for the best of the best. The Fixed Point in Time, which is a show beyond rating, often for reasons of nostalgia. Or The Lady Cassandra, which is a paper-thin plot, but actually it looks pretty good, at least with a little moisturizing.
All right. Well, I do love to give complicated ratings, so it may not surprise you to learn that this is going to be a hybrid.
Okay.
And I was thinking for a long time, like, what can I rate this? Like, I didn't have a great time with it the second time around, but it's not irredeemable. It's not an Ogron. But I think it is a little bit Lady Cassandra-ish. Like, I don't think the plot necessarily hangs together, but I do think we need to congratulate the crew for producing movie-esque, you know, visuals here. I think it looks very pretty. And in terms of the Professor Hayter, which I think is the other part of the hybrid, I do think that they, you know, they tried some. They tried, Chris Chibnall tried the real-time clock in Doctor Who. You know, Doctor Who was going to have to try that at some point. I don't think it worked, but I did think it gave Mummy on the Orient Express a chance to do the on-screen countdown thing a little bit later. Like, it, you know,
right.
kind of stood on the shoulders of this episode in terms of real time's been tried, but let's do like real time, just like small chunks leading up to the death.
Nice. Well, I actually am giving this one a Dalek. It's an average, ordinary Dalek. It's not one I go back to a lot, but I do think it's a good episode of Doctor Who. I think it works well as a visual exercise. I get into all the little moments on the surface, at least. And I think the pace is good enough that you're not going so deep on any of these illogical things and issues that we've talked about in the moment that it holds together. So... again, not one I go back to a lot, but I was pleased to go back to it here, and I watched it with my kids and they both enjoyed it. I think Grace was very much like, "Ah, it's okay." You know, which is, again, it's basically my review. Okay. But okay is okay. It's okay. Mm-hmm. And Jack really liked it. I think mostly because the aesthetic and the echoing of one of his favorite episodes, which is the Impossible Planet, Satan Pit, two-parter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of going back to that in a way that is not quite as good, but doesn't ruin it, I think was very pleasing to him. So anyway, I think it's a good episode of Doctor Who. Check it out. Check it out if you haven't.
Check it out. That's a thumbs up from Pete Paschal. Well, that's good. Okay, so our final rating is 50% Dalek, 25% Professor H, 25% Lady Cassandra.
And what is your rating, dear listener?
Yes.
You can go right now to Spotify and leave that rating. Tell us what you thought of 42 and go in. Is it a Dalek, a Viscount Banger, a Professor Hater, an Ogron, a Lady Cassandra, or a Fixed Point in Time? You can choose any of those, and we will report the results on a future episode.
That's right. And just before you fall into the sun, use your burner phone to make a second vote. Hey, one last joke
see
on
what
our way
you
out.
Did there. Oh man.
oh, I'm wincing. I'm wincing hard. I'm sorry.
Let's bring the heat here in the randomizer section of the podcast.
That's right.
And figure out where we're going next.
Right, so the randomizer is two components. Pete's going to the first. It's called the Codex. It has the complete list of Doctor Who stories in sequential order, and it automatically counts out the stories we've already done. And Pete, we are nowhere near the number of 42 stories left to do, are we?
Nowhere near multiples, many multiples of 42.
Is it a happy multiple, though?
It's a palindrome multiple. It is 191. Ooh.
191. Wow, we're going to get into the 180s before Shooty has a chance to push the number up again. This is exciting.
The 80s.
Back in the 80s, eh? If you can remember the 80s, you weren't really there unless you were watching Doctor Who.
Just thought of another connection with Amy's choice.
Oh, yeah?
Cold Star.
Ooh,
Hot Star.
Nice one.
The cold and the heat.
Love it. Boom, dropping that one at the sinker, at the buzzer, a sinker at the buzzer. Anyway, something's happening there, but we inserted it because we love ideas whenever we come across them here in Poltergeist. But anyway, the second part of the randomizer that decides where we're going next is called The Executor. It's played by random.org. It is truly random because it looks at how many living particles from the sun are bouncing around in the atmosphere. Or other particles, doesn't really distinguish whether or not it's mined from the heart of the sun or not. But that gives us bespoke randomness rather than algorithmic randomness, which is a bit rubbish. And if you don't know why, Google it. So we are going to choose between number 1 and 191. But first, we like to issue some requests to the randomizer. And Pete, what you got this week?
Well, we just came from a number... And even though I don't think there are any other Doctor Who titles that are purely a number, there are numbers.
There are.
All over the place.
Power of Three.
Power of Three, Galaxy Four,
yeah.
The Eleventh Hour.
We've done all of
Doomsday, Doctors.
I was going to say, we've done the Two Doctors, we've done the Three Doctors, we still need to do the Five Doctors.
So you know the names. I want to know the number, randomizer. Give us another number titled episode.
You know the name. Look up the number. That's fantastic. Another Beatles reference. Love it. Well, I'm going to say that I really like that sort of, you know, ethereal, sunshiny space thing. And I'm going to say give us another star-based episode. Give us something with lots of sun. You know, we had the cold sun in Amy's Choice. That would have worked. So, you know, I know the randomizer loves to get clever with it when we make these requests. It's like, oh, you wanted a sun, eh? So let me, you know, we're like, oh, okay, I get what you did there. So, yeah, something
the sun of whom?
Indeed. What should take us to the doctor's daughter?
There you go.
Oh, that would be a good pun, randomizer. So if you give me a countdown, we'll find out where it's taking us.
Sunmakers, here we come in 4, 3, 2, 1.
How old is he?
45.
45.
It's early.
Hello, Brain of Morbius.
Whoa.
No numbers, but that's all right.
No this numbers.
Is huge. This is a big one.
It does have the question of numbers, as in how many numbers of doctors have there been?
That's right. Newly relevant post-Timeless Child arc, Indeed. The Brain of Morbius, a big deal. And we will finally answer once and for all, and for all of Doctor Who fandom, what is the deal with the previous incarnations of the Doctor? As well can you see that brain pulsate through that transparent casing on that creature's head? I don't know. We'll see.
Wow. Okay. I love it. I haven't actually seen this. This does give us a Sisterhood of Khan bingo, I believe.
Does it? We haven't seen. Yeah, we've done. I've got Olya. Is that her name, right? That's the character's name?
Yeah.
We did Day of the Doctor. We did Hellbent and Magicians. Yeah. And are those the only appearances? Does she have any?
Yeah,
I think that's it.
I think so.
Wow, this will be it.
This will be it. The con is done. Stick it in the books, baby.
All right, folks.
We'll send you a postcard.
We will see you soon for that. Hey, guys, this is Pull to Open. It is a podcast. What do you like to do with podcasts? You can follow them, but not just here on your podcast app. You can go to YouTube, youtube.com/pull to open. Follow us there. Even if you don't want to become a true companion to the podcast and get the podcast a day early, just subscribing and following us there will really help out the show. You can also follow us on Patreon. We are at patreon.com/pull to open, another great way to support the show. And you can also subscribe to our newsletter at pulltoopen.net for full notes on every single story that we talk about. We're on social. Hey, we're at Pull to Open or Pull to Open 63 on TikTok, X, Facebook, and Threads, not to mention Blue Sky. And hey, why not just go ahead and do something on any of those things and say hi.
All right. And we will see you next time when we ask the essential question of how many lives have you lived, Doctor?
See you then, folks.